Good to see everybody. Speaking of live, it's good to be alive, and it's good to see everybody here. Lots of visitors today, which is good because we've got a bunch of people that are out on the road visiting their own families, and we'll sure be keeping all them in our prayers as they travel. But it's great to see Clint and Gabby back with us, to see Bo back with us. I haven't seen any of them in the longest time. Galen is kind of nodding his head yes that it's good to see them again, but I can tell that Melinda's happy for that, but wonderful to see them. Wonderful to see Brad feeling good again, and say back to normal, but Brad has never been normal, but it is good to have him with us today. We've got one that's not good to have with us today, and that is Macy, because she is so close. We'd like her to be having that baby, and so be keeping Macy and Weston in your prayers, and also Paige and her little girl. Paige is just entering her third trimester, and had a kidney stone that was so severe that it forced her into the hospital, and she's still there right now. They can't figure out doing anything until after the baby is born, so she's got a lot to go through, but she's doing better today. But please remember Paige in your prayers during this time. And again, good to see everybody here. I think I see some other people. My eyesight's getting faint, but it sure looks like one of my dear friends from years gone by back there as well. And I'm about to find out in just a little bit. Good to have a new preacher, isn't it? I have really enjoyed this time where I can kind of concentrate on some other things, and it's a comfort to know that we've got a good preacher and his wife serving very well. I've appreciated the fact that Josh worked a real job before he became a preacher, so he kind of can identify with all of us and the things that we do on a daily basis. But speaking of that, older preachers and newer preachers, I have probably what is the best story that Ronald Reagan ever told, and it involved two preachers. A younger preacher came up to an old preacher, and he said, "Do you ever have trouble with people falling asleep during your sermon?" And he said, "Well, yeah, I do." And he said, "Have you found any way to take care of that?" And he said, "I did one time." But he said, "You really have to be desperate, and you have to be careful with it." And the young preacher said, "Well, what is it?" And he said, "Well, I was preaching along, and I looked out, and half the congregation was already gone." And so he said, "I paused dramatically," and he said, "Last night found me in the embrace of another man's wife." Everybody woke up. And he said, "It was my sainted mother." So the young preacher said, "Okay, that's good. I'm glad to know that." He said, "He said, be careful the way you use it." He said, "I will." And so sure enough, a few months later, the young preacher was preaching, and it was just one of those days. It was the temperature was just right for sleeping, and his sermon had been going on for a while, and he thought he would try it. And so he did the same thing. He said, "Last night found me in the embrace of another man's wife." And sure enough, everybody woke up, and everybody was looking at him, and he just stood there for a minute, and he said, "I can't remember who it was." And then he said, "Oh, yeah, it was Preacher Fernbeck's sainted mother." Well, now that I have your attention, there is something that I have found as I'm getting back into a different swing, in a different direction. And that is that there are so many busy things to do in life, that there are times you get to thinking that this is what you were put here for. And what got me to thinking about this was right after Thanksgiving. We'd had a friend come and stay with us for several days, and then after that was Carolyn's birthday, and then all the family came by. And it seemed like they stayed for a couple of days, even though it's just an evening. And then there was some church gatherings during that time, and just different things. And finally, we got to a day where we didn't have anything on our schedule. And I said to Carolyn, "It sure is good to have a day without interruptions." And then I caught myself because I was thinking about all the stuff I had to do and not thinking about what was really important. The church and our family and our friends. And that's really common to do, isn't it? Apparently, I'm not the only one who has trouble with that, because Solomon had something very similar to say in Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 1. It says, "The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless." In the version I'm using, the word meaningless is used 38 times in the scriptures. Some of your versions will say vanity, and certainly that's a good description, but vanity has several meanings, one of which is meaningless. But in the Bible, it is used 38 times, and 35 of them are found in the book of Ecclesiastes. And Ecclesiastes isn't that long of a book. It's just 12 chapters, and there are less than 20 verses each. So once every six or seven sentences, Solomon uses the phrase meaningless to describe his life. What had happened? It's really odd when you think about what had been done for Solomon. In 1 Kings chapter 3, when Solomon became king, he offered up just a multitude of sacrifices to God. He was so appreciative for what God had done for him that in addition to the regular sacrifices, he had the priests offer up just a multitude of sacrifices of free will offerings. And then God appeared to him in a dream that night, and he said, "Ask me for anything you want." And so Solomon said, "I'm really young, and this people is really great. I'm going to need wisdom and discernment in order to lead them." And look at what God's response was. In verse 10 it says, "The Lord was pleased Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, 'Since you've asked for this and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have you asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you've asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be.'" So here we have a promise to Solomon that he would be wiser than anyone who had ever lived or anyone who had ever come, obviously with the exception of Christ, who is also deity. But look what God also did. He said, "Moreover, I will give you what you haven't asked for, both riches and honor, so that in your lifetime you'll have no equal among kings." And so Solomon became the richest man on the face of the world while he was alive. And then he was given a power that was greater than any other kingdom while he was alive. So Israel became the superpower on the earth. And as we look through Solomon's life, we see king after king after king and queen after queen coming there and offering tribute to him. And so he became very wealthy because of that. But now let's go back to this idea. What do you think would give your life meaning? Do you think if you just had a little bit more money, or if you just had enough money to where you didn't have to always be scrambling for a living, that then you would have what you wanted, what you desired, and then you could really get to the important things in life? Because Solomon was given all that plus the wisdom to know what he was using and what he was dealing with. And yet this wise man, this wealthy man, this powerful man said 35 times that life was meaningless. Why? And then as you start reading the book of Ecclesiastes, you find out why. He starts off in verse 12 by saying this, Ecclesiastes 1 verse 12, "I, the teacher, was king over Jerusalem. I devoted myself to study and explore by wisdom all that's done under heaven." Well, that's pretty natural, isn't it? He had been given more wisdom than anybody else, so he was going to use it. But the problem was he wasn't just using it for God. And the older he got, the less focus he had on God. But he had been given a talent by God, and so he was going to use it. So he said he began to study to find out what was useful for men to do while they were here on earth. And then down in chapter 2, he said, I thought in my heart, come now, I'll test you with pleasure to find out what's good. But that also proved to be meaningless. So Solomon thought that he would relax and enjoy life. And he said that wasn't it. And then in verse 3 he said, I tried cheering myself with wine. That means Solomon decided he would find out if it was good to be drunk. If it was good to be led by substances. He wasn't just having a natural amount to quench his thirst. He was cheering himself with it. And embracing folly. Very likely got involved with the debauchery that comes from that type of abuse. He said his mind's still guiding him with wisdom. Have we ever done that? You ever known anybody that's done that? Well, I wanted to find out if this was good or not. So I thought I'd just try it. Do you know how many people have doomed themselves to a life of addiction because they were curious and they thought they would just try it? And then look at verse 4. Now we're getting back to the things that are entirely appropriate as long as we keep them in their proper place. I undertook great projects, built houses for myself, planted vineyards. I own more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem for me. Remember, he's the richest man in the world. I amassed silver and gold for myself, the treasure of kings. And so now he's taking part in these big physical projects. He's working a satisfying work. Or at least he thinks it's going to be. And then he says this, I acquired men and women singers, more entertainment, and a harem as well. Understand what this harem was. Solomon had 700 wives of royal birth. They were so that he could increase his power within the kingdom. But in addition to that, he took 300 secondary wives. They still had a certain status as a wife, but it wasn't nearly what a full-blown wife would have had. They were concubines. He had a harem for one purpose. He thought he would find out if that was good. And it wasn't. In verse 10, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. Yet when I surveyed all my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind, and nothing was gained. Now let me ask you, what are you looking for completion in life, fulfillment in life? Is your job the most important thing? And as you do your job, to take care of your family, to clothe yourself, maybe you're the head of your own household, to clothe yourself, the bills have to be paid, inflation is going out of control. We have to work, don't we? And yet we get focused on this. And sometimes we think that the means to the end is the end itself. And sometimes we get to the point like I did the other day when I said, oh, it's going to be nice to have a day without interruptions. You know why I said that? It was so I could go back to work. And when I got done with my work for that day, so I could sit down and just relax. Any of y'all ever do that, especially when your kids are younger? You've been working hard. You sit down to, well, you don't read newspapers anymore. Well, I'll tell you what I did. Sit down to read my newspaper, and the kids would come bouncing in. The kids who had been waiting for me to come home. And I would think something along the lines of, can't you just leave me alone for a minute and let me relax? See, I'd been working hard all day for them. And now I was going to relax and recharge. And I got to the point, and maybe you can identify with this, where all the things that I had to do, and then the recovering from all the things I had to do, became my life. And then God, the worship, time to take Bible reading and study each day, and meaningful prayer. Well, that became the interruptions. And there have been times in my life, I'm ashamed to say, that my family became the interruptions because they were keeping me from doing the things that I was thinking I needed to do. And I did need to do them. Don't get me wrong. But my thinking was out of whack. And because of that, like Solomon, I started to lead a meaningless existence. Not because I didn't have a great family, not because I didn't worship with wonderful Christians, but it was because I got to thinking that this making of a living, when prices were high and jobs were scarce or whatever the situation might be, that was the most important. And that was just the stuff I did in between the important. And if we ever forget that, if we ever get it mixed up, then life's going to become meaningless for us. And we're going to become frustrated. And then when people say things about us that we don't like, that's really going to affect us. And then when the job doesn't go just the way we want it to, that's going to affect us. And when our health isn't just right or whatever, you just fill in the blank, whatever it is that doesn't please the king that day is happening, life becomes meaningless. And so, what's the solution? Right after Carolyn and I got married, we had both been really busy. When we got engaged, my senior year in college, I had only taken, I think, 78 out of the 128 hours I needed to get out. And so after taking 78 hours in 3 years, I needed to take 50 the last year. And I had a job waiting for me, by the way, if I could complete my degree. And so I had all that. And then on top of that, the first semester that we were engaged, I had a job. And then in addition to that, I had a fiancé. And then in addition to that, I really, really like to relax. And so I spent more time at the gym than I did in classes. And so all those things got packed in. And then as the day came closer to getting graduated and all the things that were coming up, the schedule just got piled up. And Carolyn's life was even crazier. She was the head of the intramurals for the entire college. She was on student senate. She had a job. And I kept telling her, you're going to have to slow down, even though I wasn't. And she said, no, I can do it. I've given my word for the... And finally, her dad said, you need to slow down. She said, oh, do you think so? Okay. And she did. But this was what we were coming out of. We were coming out of a really full schedule, out of a stressful schedule, about as big of a life change as either one of us had ever made, getting out of school for the first time in 100 years. Getting married, starting a new job. And so maybe this is why this little clip from a Reader's Digest really caught my eye when I was only about 22 years old. I cut it out. I keep it under glass in my office, and I look at it quite often. It's by a woman by the name of Betty Howland, and this is what she said. For a long time, it seemed to me that real life was about to begin. But there was always some obstacle in the way. Something had to be got through first, some unfinished business, time to be served, a debt to be paid. Then life would begin. And at last it dawned on me these obstacles were my life. Well, now I don't know that I would go so far as to say that the things we do are our life, but our life is made up of a series of these things. Of these appointments and deadlines and everything that we need to be doing. But when we talk about what we do with our service to God, and when we talk about what we do with our interactions with our friends, and when we talk about our relationship with our family, this is our life. This is not the obstacle. It's not the interruption. It's our life. And the moment we take off our focus from God, life gets really difficult. And it gets out of control at times. And sometimes it seems like it's spinning so fast that we can hardly stand it. And some people can't. Look at all the school shootings we've had. I think I looked it up the other day. 83 school shootings in the last year. We're putting too much pressure upon people who are not prepared to handle pressure, because we've removed God from the public square. And so now they're trying to handle pressure without God. And that's not that, that's just scratching the surface of some of the things that are going on right now. We get our lives out of control because we look at the things that should be our life, our God, our service, our family, and we make them the interruptions. So what's the solution? Paul stated it really well through inspiration in Philippians chapter 4. After we look at this passage, I think I've got one more and we're going to close. So we're almost done. But notice what he says in verse 8. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. And he says this, I rejoice greatly in the Lord that you've at last renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you have been concerned but had no opportunity to say that. I'm not saying this because I am in need, because I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. This is one of the great secrets of life, is learning to be content whatever the circumstances, because then we don't go home and worry. We don't lay awake at night and worry about the circumstances, because God's given us peace and contentment. And this is what he says. I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through Him who gives me strength. Would this help you in your life? Instead of thinking about all the things that aren't suiting us, and there's a lot, there's some serious things that need our concern and our attention, but instead of focusing so much on that, if we would focus on this, it'd change your life. Sometimes I just read through the scriptures and I just let my eyes roll over the page. But when I actually slow down and read and see what God has for me, I begin to understand that God's got a really good life for me here. If I'll just open up the gifts He's given to me and accept them. What is it that you're concerned about right now? What is it during this lesson that you've had to wrestle your mind from probably 20 times already? And I'm nearly done. Has it been your family? Has it been your friends? Has it been your service to God? Or has it been what you need to do when you get out of here? Has it been, I can't wait to get out of my dress clothes and go home and play like I did when I was a kid and as an adult as well? If we look at worship, and if we look at our Bible study, and if we look at real meaningful prayer as just an interruption, then our life cannot be what it needs to be. It's only when we go to worship with the saints and offer praise to God who deserves it, and to Christ who deserves it. It's only when we find out what their will is, and then we try and figure out to the best of our ability how we can apply it, and through prayer we ask for wisdom to do that, that life will change. And then we can understand how the writer of the book that had more meaningless phrases in it than anything else contained in the Bible did in Ecclesiastes 12. In verse 13 he said, all's been heard, here's the conclusion of the matter, fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole of man. Once we recognize that our entirety is based upon fearing God, which includes love and respect and a literal terror if we're not doing what's right, and in serving Him to the best of our ability, it will change our life. And then everything else fits. Your work will fit, your relaxation will fit, and you will certainly have plenty of time for your family, whom you love and whom you want to have a similar relationship with God. This is what we're here for. And I'm ashamed to say that still at the age of 64, I'm still learning it. But at least we're making progress, aren't we? What's your focus on? The invitation's open. If you have any need to respond to the gospel's call today, I'd encourage you to do that while we stand and sing.